Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network, a station dedicated to the concept that all manifestations of the divine are equally valid. Join Reverend Terry Power HP, Lord Onyx, and all the hosts 7 nights a week for programming covering a wide range of spiritual topics right here on Blog Talk Radio. Under a Shady Tree with Lord Terry and Lord Onyx. Come on in, grab a glass of sweet iced tea and sit right down. These Southern Pagan boys are about to start their talk. And now, here's Lord Terry and Lord Onyx.
And good evening, everybody. Good afternoon, good morning, good wherever in the world you are. We are happy you're with us. This is Reverend Terry Power, and joined tonight by my new co-hostess, not Terry and Onyx anymore, but it's Terry and Robin on Thursday night. My lady, my love, how are you tonight?
I am very well. How are you this evening, my love?
Well, I'm home. So this is always a good time when I get out a day early and get to come home on Thursdays.
Mm-hmm.
So we get to sit here together and do the show.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's all good. We got a big weekend coming up. We've already got a guest here, and we're expecting more tomorrow and then more on Saturday. It's just going to be a huge time. So I'm excited.
Me too. I'm very excited and pleased that Marcy made it the long drive all the way from Florida. So I'm really happy.
Yeah, well, she's definitely taking care of doing some visiting and stuff mm-hmm. while she's along the trip.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
So
we got this weekend. We've got all the activities here, Midsummer Ritual, and all of the guests. And then next weekend, we're going to be doing the show together again, and then driving away, headed to Indiana to attend Horn and Honey.
Yep, I'm excited about that too. I have never been there before, so I'm anticipating having a really nice time there. But
yeah, well, I'm looking forward to seeing. Yeah, go ahead.
It's always a stretch when you go to a new facility and a new bunch of people, and you know, we're pretty good about fitting in with people and meeting new people, but it's always a little bit apprehensive.
Well, we did pretty well at Florida Pagan Gathering.
Mm-hmm. True.
And fit in pretty well. We had Marcy down there in advance for us. And, mm-hmm. Of course, on this trip, we've got Torsher in advance for us. Mm-hmm. So I know someone. In fact, I've got a feeling I'm going to know probably a good handful of people at this event. There are people that I knew from the old Our Haven days. And I'm told that a lot of them are going to be there. So, I'm looking forward to meeting some, seeing some of them again, and introducing you to some of my some of the people I've known for, you know, well, more years than I'm going to tell about now. Over a decade, let's just say that. So, just a lot going on. And we've got the webinars coming up in July.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's just going to be a busy summer. And being spoken to already about an event for Labor Day weekend and possibly one in July or August in between. So a lot of interest in us coming out to visit and see people. So we're excited about it. Three workshops at Horn and Honey that we're going to be doing together.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've also been invited back south sometime around Samhain. So
yes.
So I mean, there's you know at least three more events that I think we're going to be attending this season. So I'm excited about all the activity and stuff.
As am I. I'm really looking forward to it.
All right. So tonight we're going to have questions about divination. And I think there's even a question already in the chat room or some comments already in the chat room, and we'll get back around to those. Did you want to go ahead and take our first question?
Sure. I'll read the first question. Question number one. I am relatively new to the craft. I'm trying to find a form of divination to assist me in making decisions about my path and my future. Whenever I ask someone for advice, I get all these complicated answers. Please help me figure out what form to use.
Ooh, wow. There's a lot in that. It's a short question with a whole lot of stuff in it. Well, first and foremost, I respect anybody that wants to use divination to help them. You know, a lot of people, I think, go off and do spell work kind of willy-nilly. And anybody that's using divination to help them make decisions is trying their best to listen to the divine. And I think that's always a good place to start. So I want to say, you know, good job in that regard. You know, for myself, I think that just about anything can be used as a form of divination. And without trying, hopefully not sounding too complicated, myself, to my mind, any form of agreed upon language between us and the divine can be a form of divination. Whether it's seeing symbols in the clouds or watching the behavior of animals to the more stylized forms like the runes or tarot. You know, throwing a number of pennies and looking at the, you know, how many are heads and how many are tails. I've seen stylized into a form of divination. From simply flipping a coin heads or tails, yes or no, to throwing 9 coins on the ground and looking at how many heads and tails. And, you know, and everything in between. So, you know, I think that any form of listening to the divine, you know, once we stylize it or formalize it and use it, it'll work. You know, something as simple as which way does the candle move when you ask a question? That's divination. You know, the flame of a candle, staring at the fire, at the campfire at night, looking for symbols or images. Again, that's just another form of divination. If we're looking for an answer, we will get it. So what do you think to all that, my lady?
Well, I'm not sure that I entirely agree, as usual. I think that people do need to do spell work from the very beginning, and it should, of course, in the very beginning be spell work most, you know, exclusively for themselves and to help them along on their path. And divination can be a part of that spell work, and can the spell can be built around the divination. It's one of the things I recommend to people. I do believe and agree with you that, that divination can be used to move forward on your path. There are lots of different types of divination, as you mentioned. I'm a fan of maybe a little bit more esoteric divination, divinations that involve meditations like scrying bowls or scrying mirrors or something as simple as tea leaves or crushing rose petals on water and watching them and the way they move in a bowl. And I do use tarot cards and have for years, but I do not use a deck that is based on the major arcana. I use a deck that's completely sort of a Rorschach. just pictures.
What?
Yeah, kind of. It's just pictures. And they are not associated with the major arcana in any way. Although I have used and certainly began my journey with cards, with, you know, traditional Rider-Waite tarot cards. And I've been reading cards for over 20 years now. So, but I think that in general, the simpler, the easier, the less complicated the divination method is that you use, especially as a beginner, in the beginning, that's what's going to happen. I mean, that's how it's going to happen for you. That's how you're going to get your best results early on. So if you're
What are some of those you're thinking of? Like a yes or no kind of questions from a candle flame or.
Yep, you can use a pendulum, or like I suggested, you take a darkly colored bowl, just a plain old bowl, but let it have a dark interior, and fill it with some water, crush some dried rose petals or some herbs or something that you've got around the house. Rose petals are traditional, and then just let them float on top of the water and see, just relax, look into it and see the patterns. And get in touch with what's going on in your inner mind, inner self, and listen and hear what's going on. And then you should contemplate what it is that you're being told, what it is that you're hearing. I'm not a big fan of like that, you know, flipping a coin kind of divination, because I've done experiments with it, and I've done this when I've taught divination, where I give people a quarter and I say, okay, ask it a question, and the next 10 flips record your answers. How many times you get heads, how many times you get, you know, tails. Ask the same question and do it again, and repeat that 5 times, and see if you can duplicate the answers. And generally, you do not. You get, you know, varying. That's chaos theory. You know, you never know what side of the coin you're going to get. So, for the most part, I don't think that that kind of divination is very effective, at least not for beginners, which is why I think that, you know, the scrying type of stuff. I also want to mention while we're talking about divination is sometimes people confuse divination with messages from the gods. For example, you're walking down the road and all of a sudden a feather appears or drops right in front of your face, and you don't think much of it at all. And then 2 days later, you're walking somewhere else completely different, and another feather drops right down in front of your face. Well, this is probably a sign at this point that you should pay attention to something going on. Maybe look at the type of bird that the feather came from, or, you know, what's going on in your life. Maybe it's a message from, you know, the elements. You have to evaluate it and reach out to it and feel it. And that's different than divination, although sometimes people confuse the two.
Okay. No, I do agree with you that, you know, symbols are probably the easiest way to go.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of people will say, well, what does this symbol mean and what does that symbol mean? And, you know, the best answer really is, what does that symbol mean to you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, different cultures have different ideas about wolves. Different cultures have different ideas about snakes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's really not about what someone else thinks it means. It's about, what does it mean to you? And, you know, and I do agree with Robin that that divination involves having some form of tool that you're using. You know, a message, an animal acting out of character is probably a message. That's not divination. But watching nature and observing things, the actions of things, that is sometimes, if that is the tool you're using, that is divination. There's a fine line there.
Yes.
But there are definitely times when you get the clue back forth. And, you know, somebody's trying to get your attention. That's not the same. I use the cards. You know, like Robin, I've been reading I bought my first deck, and I paid $7.95 for a Rider-Waite deck. Still have that deck. And, you know, gosh, that'd be, you know, early 80s, I bought this deck. And I've used it since, and it still speaks to me. You know, a lot of people... You know, Robin's got that different kind of deck. And actually, we'll talk more about that with the second question. If we want to wrap up the conversation on this, what is
mm-hmm.
divination? You know, I do think that where I differ from Robin in one regard is, I think that before we do spell work, we should maybe do some form of divination to make sure that we're doing the right thing. I do agree with her that spell work should be done for ourselves in the beginning.
Oh, so you're advocating doing divination to find out if you should do a spell.
Or what spell? Or a message before I go off and just stuff willy-nilly.
I don't agree with that at all. I think that if you have a need and you need to do your intention going into that working should be clear. And no amount of divination is going to change that intention. And if the gods don't want you to do something, or they don't think that you should have something that you feel you need, they're going to answer you with the outcome of the spell. And the divination is not going to do anything but in my mind, cause doubt going into doing spell working. Because I'm a true believer that if you go into spell work with any kind of doubt or hesitation about it, you shouldn't do it, period. You've got to totally believe in what you're about to do fully and know that it's the right thing and what your intention is. And if you do that, every time you do spell work, you should always have a successful outcome. You know, you often hear people talking about, oh, well, you know, my spell didn't work. Well, how did you go into it is always my first question. What did you need? What did you require? And why did you do this? Why did you do the working? And what was your intent going in? More often than not, the failing will come with the person not being 100% sure of their intent. And if you're not 100% sure of the intent, no amount of divination is going to reassure you. It's got to come from within. That's how I was taught. That's how I have experienced my path.
Okay. Yeah, that's one of those places we'll have to agree to disagree. but if there's a real need, I mean, I know a lot of people that do spell work for a lot of different reasons, and you know, I think in the largest regard we might actually agree, but using divination as a tool to guide us, I think, is always a good plan. So we'll leave it there.
Agree to disagree?
But I do agree with you that no doubt going in.
And
you know, sometimes the answer is going to be no.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the answer is going to be not yet.
Yeah, but do you sometimes think that when if people are doing divination for themselves about going into a spell work, we're getting off on a tangent, I know, but if they're doing divination for themselves and they really, 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 really want something, and the answer, let's say, is clear as a bell to anybody else looking at it that it's no, don't do this, do you really think they're going to heed that? No, because they're going to interpret what they see in a way in which they want it to be. They're not going to interpret it openly and honestly because it goes against most people's human nature that when you really want something and you're told no, then you're probably going to do the spell anyway. You're going to give it a shot and see what happens. And it's just, in my mind, it's just a waste of energy and time. And, you know, I work so simply. I just want to get it done. I want to do my spell work and wait and see what the gods offer me. Here's what I'm offering them, you know, through my working. I always have a give back. I always have a pledge. I always have a something that I'm offering them in return for what they're about to give me. And that has always worked the best for me. And I mean, and raising energy and all that, you know, that goes along with that. But so if you're gonna do the divination, in my style, the way we do it is the divination could be a part of the spell itself. You're looking for an answer inside the spell work. It's not really about whether or not you should do the spell. Because I really don't think most people are savvy enough or self-aware enough or honest enough with themselves to see a no answer and go, okay, I guess I'm not doing that spell for that thing I really need or want. You know, it's just, I think you have to remember human nature.
Okay. I will agree on this case, I guess, to disagree.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think that people have I tend to think that people do have the capacity to look honestly at a reading. Now, and I know a lot of people that don't agree with me on that. That they think that they're going to see what they want in the reading, in the divination, and go on and do whatever they're going to do anyway, so why waste the energy on doing the divination?
Absolutely. I don't think that most people who practice and most people in general are self-aware enough to do a lot of divination for themselves effectively, because I have this whole theory about forebrain and the back brain mind is the way I always teach it, is part of the reason that things like Tai Chi and yoga are so effective is that you've engaged your body doing something which keeps your forebrain busy, which allows the back part of your brain, the basic part of your brain, to relax the body, to rejuvenate, to focus on the spiritual and connect. And for a lot of people, they can't just sit quietly and meditate, especially beginners. They need something to occupy their forebrain. And so when you are doing divination for people that you know very well, including yourself, your forebrain gets in the way, and it has a lot of information that it's telling you. Well, this person, you know that they cheated on their previous boyfriend, so they probably are cheating on this one too. Whatever it is, there's stuff going on in your forebrain about yourself, about somebody else who you know very well. It's much more effective. And I think every really good tarot card reader I've ever met has admitted this and will back me up. It's much easier to read accurately for a stone-cold stranger than it is for somebody you know really well. And why is that? Because you come into that reading a clean slate. You don't have any of that forebrain activity distracting you from what you're hearing from the divine. And the same thing happens when you try to do divination for yourself. That forebrain knowledge gets in the way.
Okay. I was actually going somewhere, but I don't remember what it was now.
No, I'm sorry. I got off on a tangent. I know.
Well, I know, but you've already said the same thing a few times. So I was going somewhere. And so...
Excuse me.
No, I mean, we've already covered, I don't know. It is completely gone.
Good. I rendered you speechless for a change. How about that?
Alrighty then. let's see.
Second question? Wasn't that what you
said?
Well,
I guess so, because I'm... let's see. Yeah, second question. Well, no, let's go ahead and... we're actually close to the bottom of the hour. Let's go ahead and take a break.
Okay.
And... let me see. I was going to play a Dragon Ritual drummer song because I'm in a drumming kind of mood tonight. So I thought I would play Serpentine Seduction by Dragon Ritual Drummers, and we'll be back here in just a few minutes. Stick around, everybody.
Yep.
Thank you. There is one power in the universe, and we are perfect manifestations of that power.
And as such, we pray. We pray for peace. We pray for love. We pray for stability. We pray for the nation in which we live. We pray for the world.
We will it. We manifest it. We draw it to us. We receive it. We accept it. And we give thanks for it. And by our will, so mote it be.
To Terry and Onyx on the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. We're glad you're here. And now, back to the show.
We'll move you to Virginia.
Yeah. All right. And welcome back, everybody. This is Under a Shady Tree with Terry and Robin. This is Reverend Terry Fowler. And my lady, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am.
All right. So before the break, we were having a lively discussion about forms of divination and appropriate uses. And so now, I had hinted that there was a question coming up. We were talking about different types of tarot decks. And so if you would please, my lady, let's go ahead and ask the or read the second question, please.
Second question. What do you think of all the different kinds of tarot decks? Why are there so many, and how do I choose? I have a lot to say about this, but I'll let you go first if you like.
Well, I mean, I've got a good bit to say about it as well. And, you know, I have the same Rider-Waite deck that I've had for, you know, 30 years. And that deck is wonderful for me. When I first started really working hard at getting you know, consciously seeking out spirit message. A lot of times the messages came in symbols and images from the tarot deck because I knew that language so well. And so, you know, I personally just love that deck, and it speaks to me. I think the reason that there are so many different types, there's a lot of reasons, but I think the biggest one is that people want something that is unique. Different images mean different things to different people, and I have been told by a variety of readers that I've worked with or worked near or, you know, had conversations with that it seems that men really still like the Rider-Waite and the basic colors and the bold symbol, and that somehow it speaks to the masculine. And women like a lot more fluid symbology. And so some of the more esoteric type of cards that have more flowing symbols and that sort of thing tend to speak to women. I don't know if that's right or wrong. I know for myself I like my Rider-Waite deck. And I do know that there does tend to be that kind of, certainly not drawing a hard line that all men like this and all women like this. But in my experience, I have seen a greater use of the Rider-Waite with men, and they stick to it more so than women. And some of the symbology of the different cards, I think, speaks to something that's different between the genders, and that's kind of cool that we have those kind of differences. I mean, it would be really boring if we didn't. And Robin and I are always talking about balance and the masculine and the feminine. So that's my take on it. Now, how does someone pick their own, pick their first deck? You know, when I chose my deck, there wasn't a whole lot of choices. So I don't really have an answer to that one. You know, I would think that you need to spend some time with it. But that means right now, in this day and age, you have to invest money in a deck. And then if it doesn't speak to you, what do? Move on to another one and keep spending money. So I'm hoping that Robin has a better answer to that part of the question than I.
Well, I will say there are lots of decks to choose. Shira just wrote in the chat room last year, she did a study on how many decks there were. There were 1,109 tarot decks, 44 tarotchi decks. I'm not quite sure how you say that, 148 oracle decks, and 42 miscellaneous-type decks. There are a lot of decks by that count. And if you're one person, how do you sort through them? And my advice to everybody who I have ever taught is to start with the Rider-Waite deck, because it is the deck that most other decks base their symbology on, and it's a good education. Also, the Masons, the Freemasons, use some of that symbology, and the OTO and a lot of the other magical ceremonialists and use a lot of the same symbolism. So it's really a good basic foundation of knowledge to get started with. After you've mastered that deck, and when I say mastering the deck, I mean you really need to know the Fool's Journey through the deck. Of the major arcana, and then you use the deck and you study the minor cards as well. I've taught, tarot on many occasions, and so what I teach beginners about that deck is something very different than what I teach people who have been doing it for a long time. But be that as it may, start with the Rider-Waite, even if it's not the deck you're ultimately going to wind up with. It's really important to know that foundation, that knowledge and that basis, for many reasons, and it's used across the board. The other thing about choosing a deck, ultimately, once you've mastered your Rider-Waite and you've decided, now I want to stretch my wings and I want to try some other decks, the best way is to just go into a store that has a lot of decks. And this is why I still say to people, find a metaphysical store locally, that you can actually go in and touch things and look at them in person instead of always shopping online. A deck is something you need to hold in your hands and look at, in my opinion, and feel the energy of the deck and of what's going on with that deck, and make sure that it's going to be something that's going to move you. Because you can't get that impression looking at it online. There's a guy, Charles Butler, many years ago, who made this beautiful, gorgeous deck. I mean, just absolutely gorgeous deck. But when I held it, to look at it, it was beautiful. But when I held it, the energy just didn't mesh for me. But I loved the artwork, just absolutely loved it. But when I held the deck, it just didn't have that same feeling. On the flip side of that, when I held the soul cards that I use now, I love these cards, and every time I pick them up, it's like it's like a drink of cold iced tea on a hot day. It just makes me feel good when I pick them up, and I can't explain why. I love them, and I've been using them for over 10 years. I used to use them in my store to do readings for people. And Terry, were you going to say something?
Yeah, I was just going to agree with you about the, there are some beautiful card decks out there that just don't speak to me at all.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're great art, and, you know, some of them should maybe even be framed and displayed. But when they're trying to use them for divination, it just pieces of cardboard in my hand.
Mm-hmm. The cards, in my opinion, are like signposts pointing you in the direction. And you have to have some kind of connection to that symbolism that's in that deck. And even though the artwork might be beautiful, it's like going to a museum. You know, you go to the Louvre in Paris and you look and you see all these incredible paintings next to each other. Is one really better painting than another? No, it all depends on what you like when you're standing in that gallery. You may say, I love Van Gogh's Starry Night. That is the most gorgeous painting I've ever seen. It moves me beyond words. I just adore that. But that Van Gogh Sunflowers, I find that dreary and boring. I'm not into that at all. Doesn't do a thing for me. Somebody else might come in and go, I love his sunflower painting. And that's really what it comes down to with the deck and the cards. It's what speaks to your soul and connects with your psyche and how it makes you feel and what kind of connection you get.
Well, I do like your idea about starting with the right of way, because like you said, so many of the tarot decks are based on the symbology and the symbols of the Rider-Waite.
Mm-hmm.
They just, color them differently. They draw them differently.
Mm-hmm.
They might even use, I saw a deck that was all specifically Arthurian,
mm-hmm.
but the cards were the same. The cards meant the same thing. The characters were different, but they were still, the same symbols as the Rider-Waite.
Mm-hmm.
So I very much agree with what you're saying, and I like the idea of just starting with the Rider-Waite.
Yeah, I think that everyone should
be a good basis.
Yeah, I think everybody should be familiar with the Fool's Journey through the Arcana, and it's good life lessons too. I mean, it's just a good place to start, and it also helps you, I think, in some ways, to move along your path of self evolution, of self looking at yourself through looking at each of the major Arcana cards, and what strengths can you take from those cards? What faults does it point out about yourself to yourself?
Self evaluation,
mm-hmm.
as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hey, well, since we've ended the series on the archetypes on Tuesday night, why don't we do the Fool's Journey on Tuesday night?
You know, I was just thinking the same thing, that would be a really good series of shows to do, is to talk about the Fool's Journey through the tarot deck, and maybe even sort of make it a tarot teaching light. A light version.
Yeah, well, I mean, we could get people to ask us questions on the card that we're doing that week. Now, of course, we still have, interspersed all the rituals that we do on Tuesday nights, but
mm-hmm.
We could do a series for a while on the Fool's Journey. Maybe every other week or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So people could send us their questions, and we would talk about each card in turn, maybe get some callers to participate in the conversation.
That would be good.
All right, so be looking for those announcements, folks. I think that could be a lot of fun. And it goes to what you were saying about teaching, learning the Rider-Waite and the Fool's Journey.
Yeah, yep.
And, everything else will kind of grow out of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agreed. I think it's a wonderful idea.
Very cool. All right, so let's see.
Third question?
Yeah, third question, and we've got about 15 minutes, so we're going to need to start wrapping up. But let's go ahead and get the third question in there.
Question number three. Do I get a Vanna White dress for this? I just want to know.
You get a
Vanna White dress. you know, a sequin dress in heels to parade around in. Anyway,
I'm all for that.
I am new to reading the tarot. I am always scared by the death card. A friend told me that it is not really a scary card. She tried to explain it, but I still find it scary. Can you talk about the death card? Ooh, Mr. Cotter.
you want to start this one, I take it?
Yes, please.
All right, go ahead.
Okay, so let me take you back here many, many years ago. And I had my store in New Jersey, in Tom's River, Grimoires and Alchemy. And it was my little metaphysical store there. And I started doing readings there with my handy Rider-Waite deck. And I really thought, because that was a deck that people were accustomed to seeing, that it would go well. And every time I threw the tower or the death card, people would flip out. And this, ultimately, was what led me to looking for a deck that didn't have any symbolism in it that anybody could sit down across the table from me and say, oh, I know what that card means, or oh, that's scary, or oh, that's not what that card means. I know what that card means, because it's my reading. So that was really what led me to the soul cards, because it didn't have any meanings that came with the deck. It was all interpretive up to you and how you felt. And when I do readings, I do sort of an energetic, that's hard to explain. I do an energetic reading of the cards where I open my third eye, and I do this thing where I visually link my third eye to their third eye, and the cards are there to sort of, like I said, guide me on the important points that I've got to hit, you know, the outline, if you will. And I also, and most card readers are going to flip out at this, I don't use any fancy spread. I lay them out in a semicircle, and that's it. I'm done. I put out 8 cards, you know, in a loose semicircle, and that's it. This one doesn't cover that one. There's nothing over this one. It's just simple. And again, it's that forebrain thing with the backbrain thing. I'm not worrying about what position is this card in, and did I throw 7 cards? I lost count. No, I don't do any of that. Keep it simple and trust that the intuition will come to you to do the reading. But the death card, to talk about it, is really for people who are afraid of it. It is an issue when it gets thrown in a reading, especially to people who only know a little bit or know very little or nothing at sitting at a reading. Sometimes it can also be the opposite. If somebody knows a lot and the death card gets thrown, well, I know that's not death, but I know it's this, 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 and the other thing. And I don't want to do a reading for somebody who thinks they know as much as or more than me during a reading. And so this was why, as I said, I went to the soul cards. And, you know, because they couldn't do that, it took that element out of it. And I found that my readings were more accurate and that people were generally more happy with the reading that they received, because they let themselves relax and just go with it. So do I recommend that you do public readings with a Rider-Waite deck? No, I don't. But you should, as I said before, you should definitely know the symbology. The death card, really, what it should mean is a transition. You know, death is really a birth. And it's funny, I just had this conversation with somebody today on the phone. Death is not really death. When we were in our mommy's tummy, before we were born into this incarnation, all we knew was the darkness, the heartbeat, the water sounds, the tranquility of that. And if you think about it, it must be really scary when the convulsions start and we are coming down this canal toward light, which we've never seen before. And it must seem like we're going to die in that moment. It's painful. We get smushed. You know, it's got to seem very frightening. So what's to say that that transition from this life to whatever we go to next isn't also a birth? It just depends on which side you're on. If you're in your mommy's tummy and you're on that side of it, you don't think of that probably as a birth. First of all, you're an infant, so you're probably not that conscious of that. But you do know that this is where you've been. You've been safe. You've been comfortable. You've been warm. You've been fed. All your needs have been met. Now you're going into something totally different. And that's all it is. It's transition. So it's a birth into a death from this incarnation is really a birth into the next one. So with every death, there's a birth. And the death card does not, again, Niv was saying yesterday, that's right, we had this conversation yesterday on the phone. So death, the death card is not about physical death and dying. It's about that transition. Something is about to change. And it doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad change. It just means it's going to be an upheaval. It's going to be change. And the Tower card, let's spend a minute talking about the Tower card. You know, Tower card, people talk about it's scary, it's bad. No, again, it's about change and transition. And sometimes change can be bad, but sometimes ultimately it's not bad. And I look back at my own life and I draw from experience. Oh, my God, I was in that relationship. It was so horrible. Why did I let that happen to myself? You know, horrible, horrible, horrible. But you know what? It led me here and now. And I wouldn't take back a moment of it because it led me here and now. And that's kind of sometimes what the Tower embodies is you may be in a rough spot right now or you're about to be in a rough spot. But that doesn't mean it's not all going to work out okay. You just, this is something you have to go through. And how you choose to go through it and how you choose to perceive it is on you. Okay, I'm done now.
All right. Well, I agree with most of what you said. The death card, I've had very good luck doing public readings with my Rider-Waite deck. And doing readings for other people with my Rider-Waite. I don't tend to have a whole lot of, you know, issues with people, you know, questioning my readings. But I do agree the death card is about transformation. It is often about endings, which are new beginnings. Like, you know, like Robin was saying. It is just simply a new beginning. Something is going to have to end, and that's often scary. But change is first inevitable, and second is required. Because if nothing changes, we stagnate. There is no growth without change, and there's no growth without endings and new beginnings. So. In a lot of ways, if you look at it from that perspective, the way Robin was describing it and the way I'm describing it now, it's almost a hopeful card because there's going to be something usually better on the other side of that change as we move into a new place, usually through growth. Now, the Tower card, I'm going to disagree a little bit about, I don't see it as it's similar to the death card, but I think of it like the forest fire that clears the brush, the tearing down of a dilapidated building so that something new can be built in its place. It is about destruction. It's Shiva the destructor. It is clearing the way. Now, is that often scary? Well, I mean, in a lot of ways, that's scarier than the death card. But is it ultimately scary? No, I don't think it is. I'll agree with Robin on that regard. The death card is about change and transformation. The Tower card is about something pretty profound. Is usually when I get that card in a reading, it's something profound. And it is a what would appear to be destruction on one side, as well if you don't look past it to the new growth on the other side. So that's kind of my take on that card. But generally, no card is scary if you look for the guidance, because all tarot readings are kind of snapshots of the moment anyway. And we go out and change the circumstances of our actions and our life, and the reading becomes based on different information.
I totally agree with that. People ask me about readings, and I always tell them, this is like a Polaroid picture of your life at this moment. And forewarned is forearmed, and you can make change. And if you make these changes, it's possible to avoid certain things. But you have to be willing to do that kind of work. And a lot of people, unfortunately, even though they've been forewarned, they tend to not want to make change in their life to avoid certain things. Or they'll just say, well, that's not going to happen to themselves, and I don't really have to do anything. And then inevitably, you know, many times it's happened to me. It was one of the benefits of having a store. You know, you'd tell somebody something, and they'd come back 4, 3, 4, 5, 6 months later and be like, oh, my God, you were right. This happened, and I'm so sorry I didn't listen to you. I should have made this. I should have made that change. You know, it's in some ways it's kind of gratifying, but it's not gratifying because you feel like you are talking to a – they paid you for information they didn't use, and that always bothers me.
Yeah. Nothing is carved in stone in any divination.
Mm-hmm.
It is a snapshot of the moment. Particularly, I think, tarot and rune readings and those sort of things.
Mm-hmm.
It's based on the circumstances in this exact moment. And we can change them. We can change the outcome by changing the circumstances, by changing our actions, changing our life.
Mm-hmm.
And so no reading, no card is scarier than the you know, not making the change that you need. Now, unlike Robin, I do find a certain, when I do a tarot spread, you know, she was talking about the forebrain and the back brain. For me, the repetitious use of the same Celtic cross spread takes away all of the, you know, forebrain, because this is just what I do. That's the way the cards lay out for me, and I've done it so much and so many times that it actually removes me, you know, forebrain thought, and it frees me to access the Akashic records. And that's how I prepare, is I access the Akashic records.
Uh-huh.
And then I go into the reading that way, allowing the cards, and much like you were talking about, Robin, I do an intuitive reading, is what I call it. When I'm, you know, the meaning of the card, you know, according to the book and the experts, maybe this or that, but some part of that card will catch my eye, and I'll go with that. I'll follow that because that's where I'm being guided. And that's the message that I'm supposed to give.
Hmm.
So, and I tell people that on the front end, which also takes away some of their, oh, I know what that card means, and I will tell them that I don't care.
Mm-hmm. And I've had those conversations with people, but they still, you know.
Because that card, that may not even be the message that I'm being told to give you. You know, I may pull, you know, the four of wands, and see something in that card that isn't the book meaning, but is something that takes me in a different direction, and I'll follow that because that's the way I've been trained through all of my training and all of my experience and all of my experience and all of my experience is to go with it. And that's typically turned out better for me than trying to follow the book.
When I'm doing a reading, for me, it's energetic. And I have a voice that talks to me in my right ear only, which is odd. that tells me where to go and what to say. And frequently I don't remember readings 5 minutes after I've gotten up off the table. You and I have talked about this, Terry. And and so for me, it is intuitive, but it's more energetic. I'm feeling the cards in front of me because the person has shuffled them, and they have in some way chosen those cards, and that's why they've come up. And those are the things that I need to pay attention to, and the voice talking to me, giving me guidance and saying, yes, go that way, or no, that's not what that means. I don't know. I guess maybe we do it a little differently. I don't consider myself accessing the Akashic records. I consider myself connecting to the person I'm doing the reading with energetically and having a psychic moment with them, having a connection with their third eye. And in that way, I find it intuitive. But I'm connecting with them. So,
And you're right, there is a difference, because I'm not connecting with the reader as much as I am delivering a message for the reader, for the clearance.
Mm, yeah.
So when I do a reading, I'm more delivering a message rather than connecting to the individual.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know that one's better or worse.
It's just different styles, that's all.
Yeah. So, and there is a question in the chat room, and then we're going to have to start wrapping up.
Yes,
okay, do you cleanse, bless, or dedicate cards prior to using them? And if so, how does this influence your buying decision? I was always taught that when I get a new deck, sleep with it under my pillow for a while and connect with it. I'm going to let you take this one because you play with a lot more decks than I do.
Yeah, I do definitely cleanse and bless and dedicate my cards when I buy a new deck. And then what I do is I actually shuffle them, I play with them, I study the cards. I usually will do a thing where I'll pull a card a day for myself and take a look at it and again let it wash over me as self-evaluation before, and I'll go through that deck and see every card at least once or twice and do that before I'll use it for other people. I truly want to know that deck and get to know it and play with it and shuffle it and look at each card like a piece, like you would look at a piece, an artwork. I mean, what is in this card? And what is it that's appealing to me? And why today is this part appealing to me? And maybe next week a different part of the card would appeal to me. And that's how I pull apart a deck and look at it and connect with it. But again, everybody does it differently.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I know when I'm teaching someone about using the Rider Waite deck, I teach them something very similar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, pull a card a day and study it.
Mm-hmm.
See what that card means to you. What do you see tonight or today?
Mm-hmm.
Is there a daily message for you? I know a lot of experienced readers that will do a morning card
mm-hmm.
to start their day.
Yeah.
Some people read their horoscopes in the newspaper
mm-hmm.
or on the internet. Some people pull a tarot card.
Yeah. I did that for years and then decided to stop doing it because I found if I pulled a card that I wasn't happy with, it could color my entire day. So I actually stopped doing it. I don't want to know. If I'm having a crap-ass day, I don't want to know.
All right, so let's go ahead and start wrapping up. Final thoughts on the theme for tonight?
Well, actually, I'm very excited that we're going to do the tarot, the Fool's Journey through the Tarot, because that's a great idea. And I think that... it's going to be awesome, an awesome series. So that's going to be fun. I'm going to look forward to that. And obviously we have a lot to discuss because I have a feeling there's going to be a lot of things that we do differently and because we come at our paths from different sides. You came up more structured than I did. But it should be very interesting. I think anybody who's listening will probably learn a lot. And so I'm very excited about it. I'll probably learn a lot from you.
Oh, and vice versa.
Thank you.
I always learn something when we. have these conversations.
Apparently, the cat does too, because the cat just attacked Terry's feet.
Yeah. Okay. Psycho cat. Okay. So, and we do come at things from a different point of view. I think that, my experiences with you so far have been that you have a very emotional, and I have a somewhat more mental approach to things. And the truth is in the middle somewhere, and we find it most of the time. And, that makes for, A, it makes for good radio, and B, it makes for a great deal of fun in life. So, so I'm excited about the different approaches that we're going to bring to it. And, of course, how does that develop between us and over time? And how much blending does takes place in that as well?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So how does someone get in touch with us?
Oh, I don't know. You drive out to Muncie, Pennsylvania. You can certainly email us at littlestonebridge@gmail.com. Both Terry and I read that email address, or you can check out our Facebook pages at Robin A. McKean or Rev Terry Power HP. You can also get in touch with us at the radio station email address, which is, CERN.org?
CERN.org@gmail.
Yep, at Gmail. And let's see what else. My show Facebook page, which is Spiritual Wellness, Physical Health. And you can learn more about all the hosts and the people and the shows and stuff at the BTR webpage, which is...
it's actually not BTR's webpage. It's our webpage, SpiritualUnityRadioNetwork.org.
There you go. And I think that's about it.
Let's see. So you covered Little Stone Bridge, Pathworking's Facebook page?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I did.
Okay. All righty then. I found this an interesting topic, our different approaches to divination. And particularly our differences in spell work. And what we were talking about before the break,
mm-hmm.
I do wish that I could remember exactly what I was going to say, but I think that part of it was that I think that people do have the ability to be fully self-realized. And while I understand what you're saying about the forebrain, back brain, I do think that with work and with experience and with doing the dark moon rituals and the shadow work, that we can be fully self-realized. And see the truth in a reading for ourselves. Which I think is where I was going with what I was saying earlier. Anyway, I think that anyone can benefit from learning a form of divination, and whether they use it for others or just for themselves. Some people will say, don't read for yourself at all because you're going to lie to yourself. And, I think that the inner truth is there, and if we really look at it, we can see it. But any form of divination that you choose, work with it. Don't just tinker around the edges of it, but really study it. And that's what we're going to do with the Fool's Journey. And we're going to look at it not just from a tarot point of view, but from the actual message and the life lessons to come from the Fool's Journey. Because the tarot deck is not just about reading the future or whatever you want to say that divination is. But they're messages for life. And the Fool's Journey is seriously cool. So I'm looking forward to that that series. And so I guess that's about all I've got at this point as well. Thanks, everyone, for being with us. Thank you, Robin, for being my partner.
I love you. You're so cute.
Thanks to all of our listeners, whether you're listening live right now, through any of the various ways that you can listen. If you're in the chat room was kind of lively tonight, so if you're missing the chat room, you're missing about half the fun. And everyone who's listening in the archives, keep coming back. We're glad you're with us, and we're honored that you share your Thursday nights with us. So I guess that's about it.
Okay.
All right, and I guess we will just wish everyone a week filled with love and with wonder.
Blessed
Good night,
be.
And blessed be.
Blessed be.
Thanks for listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Join us 7 nights a week for exciting programming covering a variety of expressions of faith. And remember, all manifestations of the divine are equally valid.